from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Welcome back into The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harris. I'm very happy to be here with you on this wonderful Thursday. All right, let me get you guys a list that has been circulating the interwebs. So ESPN, they have been doing top 25 lists of certain players in certain sports, right? So they did an NBA one. They did an athletes overall. They did NFL. Basically, every sport that we follow, they have done. This is the top 25 players at that respective sport. They did one for college football. Now, we have not got a chance to go through this, but there's no time quite like the present. Number 10 on this list was Larry Fitzgerald. These are best players of the 21st century, so since 2000. So I know what's going to happen. Some of you are going to say, well, what about so-and-so? Well, did they play after 2000? If the answer is no, then they're not on this list. Larry Fitzgerald is number 10. Joe Burrow is number 9. Bryant McKinney, number 8. Number 7, Reggie Bush. 6, Tim Tebow. Number 5, Ed Reed. Number 4, Vince Young. 3, Cam Newton. Number 2, Baker Mayfield. And number 1, they have as the best college football player of the 21st century. They have Ndamukong Suh on this list, who was an incredible defensive tackle at the University of Nebraska. I think I disagree with almost every single part of this list. Now, should Ndamukong Suh be in the top 10? Absolutely. You could argue that Ndamukong Suh should be a defensive player that has the Heisman Trophy. I believe that season he was the best player in college football back in 2009. He was the best player, though, that we've seen since 2000. The answer for this is Cam Newton. The answer is Cam Newton. Now, Joe Burrow had a better individual season than Cam Newton, but when you go back and you look at the players that Cam Newton played with, and then you look at the players that Joe Burrow played with, the fact that Cam Newton was able to win the national championship at Auburn is the most impressive thing that we have seen in college football since 2000. So Cam being at number 3 doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I also think that Reggie Bush should be higher on this list too than number 7.
Okay, so Bush is way too low. Like,
I also think Tebow's too low on this list, too.
I was about to get that. Tebow's too low. You could argue Tim Tebow's the most accomplished college quarterback ever. Like, he won multiple national titles. He won the Heisman Trophy. They won, what? They lost under 10 games in his 4 years there. Like, you could argue what he did at Florida is the most impressive college quarterback we have ever seen. And he's at 7. I love Vince Young. Vince Young was fantastic to watch. Tebow beneath Young is nonsensical to me.
Tebow should be ahead of Vince Young.
I agree. And then maybe I just missed it. Was Joe Burrow not on this list?
No, Joe Burrow was on the list. Joe Burrow was number 9
okay.
on the list.
He's too low as well. We can argue about the Cam Newton thing. Cam Newton is great. Cam Newton's awesome. He willed that Auburn team to win. We agree on Sue. You don't get to throw 60 touchdowns in a year and you're below Bryant McKinney, okay? Bryant McKinney was an awesome offensive tackle. He is not, did not have a better college career than Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow should be in the top 5, if not top 5, 6 or 7, not 9. Not beneath an offensive tackle, no.
The only argument for Burrow being that low just has to be that he didn't have a great college career. He just had a great year. But that would also be the same argument that I imagine you would have to happen for Cam Newton too, that Cam Newton didn't start at Florida, had his troubles, had to go down to the JUCO ranks, came back, dominated for a year, and then became the number one overall pick. Maybe you're penalizing Burrow a little bit by the players that he played with. I mean, if you were telling me, like, I'm looking at his top three receivers, Ja'Marr Chase was his leading receiver, Justin Jefferson was his number two receiver, and Terrence Marshall, a guy who's going to play, what, 8 to 10 years in the league? I believe he's on the Carolina Panthers. I mean, Burrow just had nothing but weapons alongside him. I still don't know if that's a reason to knock him and have him further down on the list. I also think, maybe this is just like revisionist history, I gotta think Larry Fitzgerald should be a little higher on this list too. Larry Fitzgerald probably should have won the Heisman back in 2003, but you remember, I think it was a game, maybe my memory's a little bit off, they played Miami at the very end of the season. It was one of those games where, hey, if you're going to win the Heisman, you need to put together a pretty big effort. I don't think Larry Fitzgerald really showed out in that game, and that was the difference in him winning the Heisman Trophy or not. But I feel like there are prospects that come around, you know, every couple of years that all of us are pretty certain, oh, that guy's going to work. I would say that Marvin Harrison Jr. feels a lot like that right now. When he was coming out of Ohio State, I think we all look at him as a wide receiver and think, oh, yeah, that's going to work. I think we all felt that same way about Larry Fitzgerald, too, and the kind of player that he was at Pittsburgh. And when he went to the NFL, you just knew that that guy was going to have success. So if you guys missed it, we're going through the list of the top 25 college football players post-2000. Larry Fitzgerald was number 10. Burrow was number 9. Bryant McKinney, probably the best offensive lineman we've seen, at least from a college perspective, in the last 25 years or so. He was number 8. Reggie Bush was number 7. Tebow, number 6. Ed Reed was number 5. Vince Young, number 4. Cam Newton, number 3. Baker Mayfield, number 2. And number 1 was Ndamukong Suh. I know you won the Heisman Trophy, so that obviously should put you very high on the list. I don't think Baker's in the top 10 of the last 25 years. And he was a phenomenal quarterback at Oklahoma. I think we're starting to learn about Lincoln Riley's system, and we just didn't really know it back then. But hey, you go to Oklahoma, you play in that system, you play in that scheme, you're just going to put up a lot of big time numbers. He won the Heisman Trophy, did everything that you can do in college football, certainly had an all time iconic great career. I think Baker at 2 on this list is way too high. I'm sorry, Reggie Bush was better in college than Baker Mayfield was. I'm not sure if Baker Mayfield was better in college than Matt Leinart was. Now that we're going back and really going through this thing, Baker was better than Matt Leinart? I don't think so.
This might be a hot take. I think they got the wrong Miami safety on that list. I think Sean Taylor was better in college than Ed Reed. And that's no disrespect to Ed Reed, but Sean Taylor was different. Now, maybe I'm just too young to truly appreciate Ed Reed because he was, what, on that 0-1 Hurricanes team that just dismantled Nebraska in the national title. But I remember as a kid, people talked about Sean Taylor like he was different, and he was. Like, Sean Taylor should be on that list ahead of Ed Reed. Again, maybe my age is showing there, but Sean Taylor was awesome in college.
A lot of people are arguing the Cam Newton thing, and Rob, this is something that you and I go back and forth about. I just don't think people maybe realize the talent level that he had on his team and how Cam was really the only one of them that made it. I mean, that year, the number one receiver for the 2010 Auburn team is Darvin Adams. The number two receiver on that team is Terrell Zachary, Emery Blake. Their fullback was their number four wide receiver on that team. It was Cam and a bunch of dudes. Now, I'm not saying that take away from Joe Burrow. They are the most talented team that we have seen since the 2001 Miami Hurricanes team. the guys that Cam was playing with and the guys that Joe Burrow were playing with are not comparable at all. He had Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson as his 1-2 on the outside. That ain't what Cam had to play with. We can go through that defense for LSU and how many dogs they had on the defensive end. So, yes, the numbers for Burrow are more impressive than the numbers for Cam. Cam had to do way more to get that team to win the national championship than Joe Burrow had to.
I'd also say, to defend Burrow, he probably had the far more difficult schedule. Remember that in non-con week two, they played at Texas, and he dominated that game. Like, they were at Bama, dominated that game. Big SEC title game against Georgia. It was Georgia on the come up. The Georgia we know dominated Georgia. Oh, they put what, 60 on Oklahoma in a playoff game? They put 60 on Oklahoma. Like, I feel like sometimes when I defend Burrow over Cam in college, it comes up like I'm anti-Cam. Cam was awesome in college too, but Burrow was an air. We knew the Heisman was over in week 7. Like, that's insanity how good Joe Burrow was. It felt like the college football was good that year, and Burrow was head and shoulders above everyone else. Where Cam, college football was good the year Cam was great, but like Bama was in a down year relative to Bama. LSU was in a down year relative to LSU. LSU with Burrow was playing creme de la creme teams and putting it on people.
The last thing about Cam here is, I think now when we go back in 2010, I mean, didn't Cam kind of show us what the future of the position was going to look like? Like, now in hindsight, isn't that what Josh Allen looks like? When you think of the kind of offense that he runs, the style of quarterback that Josh Allen is, wasn't Cam Newton just a look into the future? Hey, this is where football is going. This is where football is trending. You and I come from, you remember being told, hey, these schemes, these routes, this offense is never going to work at this level. Defenses are way too fast, way too skilled. You cannot have a quarterback that does these things. Cam was kind of the first one, at least of this more modern generation, to be, no, like, we can run these things. We can do more RPOs. We can have the quarterback be a focal part of the run game. There was not many quarterbacks that you can say that for when you and I were growing up where the quarterback was a part of their run game. That's why I'm so critical of people when we kind of disrespect Lamar and everything he can do. No, like, why the Ravens are good is because of Lamar's mobility and how that opens things up for you. We can't discredit his mobility, his run game. That's part of what makes the Ravens one of the 5 best teams in the National Football League. Coming up on the other side, we'll get to the Kansas City Royals. I'll also give you my daily NFL thought for the day. Keep it right here. So drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. Your official broadcast partner of the Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78 million pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Counting down the 100 days until the Chiefs' title defense begins at Arrowhead.
Harrison Butker set to kick it off. The run-up. Butker's kick and Super Bowl 58 is underway in a high, deep, spinning kick.
Every day at 3:15 on The Drive.
Let's get back to the Royals here in a bit, but let me give you one NFL thought before we do that. We do that every single day. I believe, tell me if I'm wrong, Rob, it's like 37 days until the season starts?
35. 5 weeks exactly away from Chiefs and Ravens.
Yeah, I knew it was coming up. I knew the number was in the 30s. I couldn't remember exactly, so I apologize that I couldn't remember. But, I mean, we did the Bears earlier. We both got sidetracked. That's my fault. Let's talk about the Houston Texans here, and then we'll get back to the Kansas City Royals. I believe the Texans are this year's version of the Detroit Lions. Everything feels like it is in line for them to take a big step forward. The Lions actually took the step forward. I tell you guys this all the time. There are two major jumps that you have to make in the NFL. One is being a bad team and then becoming a good team. The next is, how do you go from being a good team to a great team? There is a difference between being a 9-win team and an 11-win team. Yes, it's only two games, but in practicality, the 11-win teams can win the Super Bowl. The 9-win teams can't. You got to get real lucky and real hot down the stretch to be a 9-8 team that finds yourself in the Super Bowl. It's not that hard to do that if you're a 11-12-win team. Those are the ones that win Super Bowls. Now we'll see if the Texans can take that jump. Last year, the Texans won one of the weaker divisions in the league and went 9-8. Now, they went on the road. They won a playoff game. They have one of the young star franchise quarterbacks in the league. They went out. They made more moves on the offensive end. There are a lot of things to like about the Houston Texans. You got to go out there and do it. These games are not played on paper. Sounds good. It's fun to go through it. That's all you can do in August is play these games on paper and the hypothetical of what's going to happen. That's part of the fun of this. But coming up real soon, we're going to see the Texans playing real games against real teams. And we're going to see how that talent matches up. We're going to see if CJ Stroud can take the jump from year one to year two or continue to maintain where he is. If he takes that jump, CJ Stroud has a chance to win NFL MVP. If he doesn't take that jump, Houston is going to be viewed as one of the more disappointing teams in the league, and they're going to have to, I don't want to use the term start over. That seems extreme with where they are, but you're going to have to recalibrate some things. The Texans have made a lot of moves this season that suggest we think we can win the Super Bowl. You guys seen The Wire? We talked about walk, crawl, and then run. Last year, I believe, was the crawling stage for the Houston Texans. They are ready for the run part. They think they can compete with Kansas City. They think they can compete with Baltimore. They think they can compete with Buffalo and Cincinnati and the teams that have legitimate Super Bowl chances. I bet if you ask people in Houston who's the biggest threat towards the Kansas City Chiefs, the large majority of people are going to say us. We think that we are that. So let's see. You play Kansas City later in the year. You got some big games, some nationally televised games early on in the season. Let's see if Houston can make good on a lot of the hype that they have coming into it. I think it is safe to say that aside from the Jets, so the Jets are hyped for a very different reason, the most talked about, the most hyped team coming into the season is the Houston Texans. And their schedule, I would say early on, allows you to kind of get going a little bit. They have Indianapolis, Chicago. They play Chicago on Sunday Night Football the second week of the season. So we will get to see this matchup when they're actually playing. Minnesota, Jacksonville. I mean, that's a stretch over the first month of the season that you can start 3-1. And then you play Buffalo. You got some more difficult games. Those games are more toward the end of the season. You play on the road at Dallas, on the road against Kansas City. You play Baltimore. You've got that stretch where you play those three games in a 10-day stretch because they play on Christmas against Baltimore. So I like this Houston team. I'm in the same boat as everybody else. There's a lot of things to like about this Houston team. You now got to go and make the jump from being a 9-10 win team to see if you can be an 11 or 12 win team and really compete to win the Super Bowl.
Listen, I understand, and I agree with you. That's honestly the bigger jump from bad to good, is from good to great. But in recent memory, Carrington, this is the jump that all the quarterbacks that we deem the best in the NFL made. Remember the first year Lamar Jackson as a starter? He came in for Joe Flacco. It was toward the end of the year in 2018. It was with the Chiefs for setting the world on fire. Lamar Jackson came in, and the Ravens were revitalized. And suddenly, he made them a playoff team. And they lost in the playoffs in the first round of the Chargers, but he revitalized the team. You know what they did the following year? They were the one seed. Like, they took that step because they had the quarterback. Josh Allen, they lost on the road to the Texans. Deshaun Watson's Texans, by the way, to make you feel how long that was. On the road in the playoffs in his first year as a starter. His second year as a starter, they played in the AFC title game against the Chiefs on the road. That's a big jump forward. Mahomes is an outlier, so I'll put him aside because his jump did happen, but it was from great to super great. But name a good quarterback in the league, and this is the jump they tend to make. They go from year one starter, and they get in the dance. And you look and you go, oh, look at that team. Year two is when it becomes, wow, look at that team now. And if CJ Stroud is one of those guys, which I think he is one of those guys. I felt he was one of those guys coming into that draft, and I think the Panthers are going to be kicking themselves for years and years down the stretch of not drafting that guy. They're going to ascend into that next level. Do I know they're better than the Chiefs this year? I don't know. We'll see it, I think, at some point in the playoffs. They're definitely less experienced in the playoffs, so it'll be interesting to watch. But CJ Stroud being that guy, all the that guy makes those jumps. Even Aaron Rodgers, his first in the playoffs was a struggle, and then they jumped and they became the Packers. Like, this is what you do when you're one of those dudes at quarterback.
Yeah, no, this is what happens. And I do think that you have to look at Houston, and this was the conversation that we were having about Tua, and why would you pay Tua if you don't feel like you have a quarterback that can go up against these guys? If you're Houston, you have to feel like you have a quarterback that, not now, I guess maybe not last season, we'll see if he takes that jump this year. I mean, last year, these were the other teams that won the division, aside from Houston, was Baltimore, Buffalo, and Kansas City. If you are Miami, you do not have a quarterback that you think can go up against those guys. If you are Pittsburgh, I don't think that guy is on your roster. But Cincinnati feels like they have that guy. Jacksonville clearly feels like they have that guy. The Jets feel like they have that player, and other teams are still trying to figure it out. If you are Houston, you are in a really good spot because you know you have a coach that can get the defense where it needs to be. You also have to feel like, maybe not now, but by the time he's 24, 25 and starts to enter his prime, you have to feel like you have a quarterback that can stand toe-to-toe with Josh Allen and win a postseason game. Stand toe-to-toe with Lamar Jackson. If you give yourself a fighting chance against the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, Houston is one of those teams that you would have to say they feel their quarterback is going to ascend to that ability, and let's see if he does.
They also have the most valuable commodity in the NFL, which is a good quarterback on a rookie contract. You named all the other competitors in the AFC. The Texans have an inherent advantage over all those because for the next two and a half years, you know what they can do? They can support him in a way those other teams can't. Joe Burrow's contract is big. It's prohibitive. Patrick Mahomes' contract is big. It's a little bit prohibitive. Lamar Jackson, big contract, a little bit prohibitive. Josh Allen, same deal. The Texans are paying peanuts for their talent compared to talent for C.J. Stroud, which allows them to go out and get a Danielle Hunter, go out and get Stephon Diggs and eat a lot of his contract money because, hey, we can take on that salary because we know we're not paying our quarterback market value. They have what the Chiefs had in a window there right now. Now, I'm not saying C.J. Stroud is Patrick Mahomes, but if you're the Texans, you go out of your way to make sure guy 2 through 53 are better than guy 2 through 53 on the Chiefs, and maybe you lose guy 1 to 1, but the money comes out in your favor. I think that's another reason why the Texans are dangerous is because their GM is operating like, I have the guy at quarterback, and I have 3 more years of him making no money, so watch this. Because not a lot of teams could take on Stephon Diggs' contract. The Texans did because they had the room because their quarterback isn't paid.
I don't think Houston feels like they have Patrick Mahomes. Houston should feel like they have Drew Brees, though. I think you can see a Drew Brees.
Drew Brees won a Super Bowl in the Tom Brady era.
I agree. That's why I think if you're Houston, the goal is not to have a quarterback better than Patrick Mahomes. I don't think that's possible in today's NFL. The goal is to position yourself to, do you have a quarterback that you think you can win a Super Bowl with? I think you have to answer yes if you're Houston. I think you feel really good about what you saw in year one with C.J. Stroud. I mean, he was 22 years old last year. You're thinking you got your quarterback. You take advantage of this rookie contract the way that you have so far. It really goes to show you how your fortune can turn really quickly in the league. And that's why I don't understand why so many teams are afraid to push back. Houston was looked at. It was not that long ago. They were looked at as the worst franchise in the National Football League. They were looked at as the worst roster, completely dysfunctional, had no hope and no future. They then went out and drafted. They hired the right head coach. They hit in the draft. And fast forward, people are betting on them to win the Super Bowl. That's how quickly things can turn. That's why I don't understand when people are like, well, if you don't get rid of this guy, well, then what are you going to do? Try. That's the answer. The answer is try. Houston tried eventually. Now, they had a top 3 pick. It's obviously easier to do that if you select that high in the NFL draft. But the only way that you're going to compete in the AFC is try to find a guy that you think can stand up against those Giants. You're going to have to, over a 3-week stretch, play a team that is quarterbacked by Patrick Mahomes and then Lamar Jackson and then Josh Allen and then Aaron Rodgers. Like, that is the only way you are navigating yourself out of the AFC. You got to give yourself a fighting chance.
I'll say this, though, and I agree with you on the whole. One thing the Texans did is they tanked. Like, we don't talk about the same way we talked about tanking in baseball in 2013, 14, 15. The Texans tanked. They traded Deshaun Watson for the bevy of picks. And if you were even a little bit of a quality asset in Houston, they were getting rid of you. They walked on J.J. Watt, who's a first ballot Hall of Famer, who still had a productive or productive and a half year left in Arizona. See you later. Traded Deshaun Watson. No interest. Goodbye. Thank you. We can name players that were solid in Houston that the Texans just said, okay, see you later. You're not part of our future plans. And they walked on everyone. They then fired their coach and their GM. Like, they didn't just try. They hard reset. A lot of owners aren't willing to hard reset because in the turmoil and the time from good through the hard reset back to good, you lose a lot of your fan base and you lose a lot of money in an empty stadium. Like, the Davis Mills era definitely happened in Houston. Their tanking is what led them to this, and how they could get both C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson is they had so many high draft picks.
Coming up on the other side, let's get back to the Royals. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. Your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio.
Welcome back into The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the Odyssey app. Rob, I feel like the Royals are very, very straightforward right now. I like it like this. To quote The Wire, Omar, like it's simple. I feel like the Royals really only have one question. Like, you guys tell me if I'm wrong. 913-586-7610. Now, there are like micro topics around this team. How are they going to handle the seventh? How are they going to handle the eighth? Who's the closer going to be? Can Bobby Witt Jr. keep this up in the, you know, last 53 games of the season? There are certainly storylines about the Royals. I mean, isn't there really only one question? They're done playing the White Sox. Are they going to be able to play winning baseball against the rest of baseball and not just Chicago? They have been dominant against Chicago. They've been the definition of average against everyone else. The Royals this season are 12-1 against the White Sox. They are 500 against every other team in Major League Baseball. So, Rob, you tell me if I'm wrong here. Text line. I'm happy to talk about this. 913-586-7610. There are obviously subpoints, or there's a subplot going on regarding the Royals. I feel like all of it really leads back to one thing. The Royals have put themselves in a position now due to beating up on the White Sox. In all the other games, they have done exactly what they're supposed to do. They have treaded water. They have treaded water over the course of the end of the season. If they continue to tread water, they will probably not make the postseason. Just based on the math, based on the numbers. If they just play 500 baseball the rest of the way, that will probably not be enough for them to make the postseason. They don't have to be the best team in baseball down the stretch, but they are going to have to do a little bit more than just simply play 500 baseball the rest of the way. And what would that be? 26-25, 27-26, somewhere in that range. I just don't know if that's going to be enough to get you the amount of wins that you are going to need to be able to make the postseason. You're going to have to play a little bit better than that down the stretch. So again, maybe there is something that I am missing with the Royals, but I feel like every topic that we can discuss with the Royals falls really under one umbrella. They are done playing the White Sox. They are going to have to win series against Cleveland. They are going to have to win series against Boston, and they're going to have to finish this series. They are 3-12 in rubber games. You're not going to be able to do that down the stretch and make the postseason. They're going to be in a very similar place. They're going to lose the first game, win the second game against Cleveland. You got to find a way to win that third game. This series against the Tigers, you're going to have to find a way to get a split in this. Or if you get the Tigers where it's a 2-1 series advantage and in that fourth game, those are those swing games that can be the difference of you being up two games in the wild card hunt and potentially being tied at the end of the day. That's the margin of error that we are now discussing with the Royals.
So that small margin of error, I think they tried to address at the trade deadline. Like, it's not 100%, but Carrington, you and I can both go through and in our minds remember games the Royals bullpen blew one and they gave one away. And how much of the bullpen giving one away affects that rubber game number? I mean, they're what? They've lost a bunch of rubber games. Like, how much of that is J.J. Piccolo and co. said, we're aware of that, and we have to go fix our major deficiency, which was their bullpen. How much of that now can be fixed because they have an actual closer? They have an actual bullpen that, you know, it's still volatile. It's a bullpen in baseball, but you can be far more reliant on it. Like, think about that Diamondback series. They blew one of the games of the Diamondback series because James McArthur couldn't hold it down. That was a rubber game. You feel like if you had won that one, you win that series. Maybe that stat's a little different. So we can go through the schedule and probably find more games like that Diamondbacks one when you felt like, man, we're in it if they can just hold it down. There was a game in Cleveland. Seth Lugo was dominant, came out. The Royals blew it from there. I know that wasn't a rubber game. Maybe if you hold on to that one, you feel a little different about this team. How much of the change the Royals made at the deadline, which let's be honest, they made a change at the deadline, can affect those stats and make us feel like instead of being a 500 ball club against non-White Sox team, they can be a 55% win club against non-White Sox teams. And that 55%, that gets you home. Is it possible the bullpen changes our fortunes and the way we view the team?
100%. Absolutely possible. No denying that. Could this be what they need to play three or four games over 500 in the final 53 games? And could that be the reason why they make or miss the playoffs? Rob, at this point, we are talking about the margins with this team. The Royals, regardless of which side that they make the postseason, maybe they make it in as the winner of the American League Central, or they make it in as one of the wild card teams. They are not running away from whoever finishes at the third team or the fourth team. They're all going to be jumbled up. We're talking about the difference in you winning 90 and winning 88 games. 90 games could have you hosting a postseason game. 88 games could have you on the outside looking in of the American League wildcard picture. That's how tightly contested these teams are. Someone on the text line says, CDOT, but the Guardians are 5-5 against the White Sox. What says you? They're also 60-37 against every other team in baseball. So my questions for the Guardians are just different than the questions that I have for the Kansas City Royals. I'm not saying that the Royals need to apologize for the schedules that they have. They are in the exact same place that Minnesota is in. Minnesota is also a team that has been propped up by beating up on the White Sox. The Guardians have shown me in their other games that they're still a really good team. 60-37 is nothing to... That's a really good baseball team. Now, it doesn't make sense to me that they have struggled against the White Sox. The fact that Cleveland has lost 5 games to the White Sox is absolutely beyond me. It does not make any sense how that can be the case. But I want to be clear. I am not knocking the Royals for how you got here. The games against the White Sox count the same as the games against the Yankees. You won one game and it gets you closer to the goal. But their season has a sort of symmetry to it. They are 11 games over 500 against one team. They are exactly 500 against the other 28 possible teams that you can play in Major League Baseball. They don't play the one team anymore. They only play the other 28 teams the rest of the way. They cannot play 500 baseball anymore and expect to make the playoffs. Not exactly 500 baseball. They're going to need to play a couple of games over. You and I went through it. They probably have to win, 27 games, we think, down the stretch? 30 games, we think, for them to make the postseason? They probably, at a minimum, have to win 25 or 26, I think, to consider it. If they win 23 games down the stretch, they're not making the playoffs.
Yeah, that would make them 83-79. The AL is too good for 83-79 to be in the postseason. Like, maybe Boston and Minnesota or the Royals, maybe one of those or multiple teams come back to the pack, but 83 wins makes you the 0-3 Royals, and you're not a playoff team. I could see a scenario where, because the schedule has so many of these teams in the wild card hunt playing each other, that maybe 85-86 gets you in, similar to what you said. But if you go 23-30 down the stretch, you're not a playoff team. And that's fine. It's a step forward. We'll talk about it in February and January of, hey, the Royals took the step. Now what's next? But if you go sub 500 ball down the stretch and you miss the playoffs, you have no one to blame but yourselves, because management has given you the weapons. You have the pieces. You're in the position. Right now, you're holding a wild card spot by 2 games. You are in pole position, for a NASCAR analogy. The job now is to hold on. Hold on down the stretch. Maybe in the first round against the Astros, you lose. But the prevailing wisdom is you should hold on to a wild card spot. If anything, you should be staring at the Twins and try to jump them and feel more secure in wild card spot 2 than wild card spot 3. There is no reason to go 23-30 down the stretch and be an 83-win team. I know some people will be like, hey, enjoy the ride. They're better now. But 83 wins would be a disappointment for this club at this point.
No, I mean, I made the analogy earlier. Right now, what I am doing is like what you see on election night. Like, when they go up to that map and they show you the states that you need to win to lock up the presidency, that's what I'm starting to do. Hey, if you want to make the postseason, this is the path that you need to do it. These are how many votes you need. These are how many wins you get. These are the colors. Hey, you need this part of the map to be red and not blue. Because if it's blue, you are not winning this election. I think that's where we are. To the point about Minnesota. Minnesota this season, they are 50-47 against the other teams in baseball. They are 9-1 against the Chicago White Sox. So I mean, if just looking at it, it is obvious how the Royals and Minnesota got to be here. You got to be here, and now Minnesota has a couple more games left against the White Sox. They don't have that many more. They only have 3 more left against the team, and then they'll be done with it as well. But if you look at the wild card picture and sort of how we got here, like if you're telling the story of the first, I guess, 3/4 of the way of the baseball season, Minnesota would be in the postseason right now. Kansas City would be in the postseason. Those two teams have done exactly what you were supposed to do. You have pounded on the worst team in your division. You have now done what you need to do elsewhere. Kansas City has a 550 win percentage. The Minnesota win percentage is 551. So those two teams have been virtually even this year. Now, as the Royals have that part of their schedule, which is now complete, and Minnesota, they're real close to ending that part of it, you're going to have to continue to take care of business against the other teams if you want to lock this thing up. You are only a couple games up on the Red Sox, and the Red Sox come to Kansas City next Monday through Wednesday. So you're going to have time to create that separation the way we're going to continue the election analogy. Hey, those games against the Red Sox, they count for a little bit different against the games than they do against the Washington Nationals at the end of the season. It would certainly benefit you, the team that is directly behind you. You win that series and take two out of three from them, or possibly sweep that series, and you give yourself a five-game lead with less than 60 games to go. You cannot undersell how important those games are here coming up in, what, 5 days?
The other thing with the Royals, it's when the text line brings it up, and it's a great point. You've been referencing this on the show. The Royals have, what, three homestands left? Is it three or four homestands left? It's four homestands left. We can look at the splits. You know what the Royals are? They're the 21 Yankees at Kauffman Stadium. They are fantastic at home. When they sleep in their own bed, when they drive their own car to work, when they, whatever it is about playing at home, the Royals at Kauffman are world beaters. You know what they are not? World beaters on the road. They're a sub-500 team on the road. So you got to get that. I mean, on top of beating teams other than the White Sox, you got to correct that. You did a good job this week. You played the White Sox on the road. You smoked them. Double win. But you can't go to Detroit and lose a series and then have fans like, well, they're just better at home. There aren't enough home games left on the schedule for you to just rack up those auto wins. And their home games are against very difficult opponents in Boston, like you said. St. Louis, who's in a playoff on the NL side. I know you beat them twice this year, but they're a similar team to you. Minnesota, who's above you in the standings. Another team coming to Kauffman at some point. Cleveland, who's also above you in the standings, is coming to Kauffman at some point. Like, you need to start doing a better job when you're away from home, because then those home series, which are vitally important against better competition, there isn't the pressure of must-win series because you've built up some equity in winning a few series on the road.
I mean, looking at their schedule, so you mentioned it, they have four homestands remaining. They have two homestands in each of the next 2 months. So in their August homestands, they have Boston and St. Louis. They also have the Angels and the Philadelphia Phillies in August. I don't want to go through their entire home schedule. But I do think it is important to note, we were talking about kind of a difficult stretch of their season. That is coming up in about 25 days or so. They have a stretch where they play Philadelphia, who is arguably the best team in the National League. They then play Cleveland, Houston, who looks like they could be a possible playoff team, whether it's the wild card or their, them winning the AL West. They play Cleveland, Minnesota, and the Yankees. So there is a stretch there from August 23rd until September 11th. They play nothing but possible playoff teams, and half of those games are at home. So if you want to chart a path for, at this point, I am only concerned with them making the playoffs. We can have that conversation about development and did you feel good and take a step forward. I am only concerned with it. We are here looking at the standings. We are at the end of July. We are heading into August. They have their first game in the month of August coming up here in, what, 2.5 hours. The Royals have a two-game lead on Boston in the wild card. They play Boston here coming up next week at Kauffman Stadium. They have a 3.5-game lead over Seattle and a 4.5-game lead over Tampa Bay. So they still have a handful of games left against Minnesota. They still have a handful of games left against the Cleveland Guardians as well. The path to make the playoffs is directly right there in front of the Kansas City Royals. The teams that they need to play, either in front of them or directly behind them, are still on the schedule. It is a very simple pass or fail grade for me with this team at this point. We can have the, hey, it was a fun ride, enjoy the, we can have that conversation when the season is over. Right now, it is about figuring out the pathway and the best course of attack to try to ensure that this team can be one of the top seven teams in the postseason.
Like I said earlier, I'm not here for enjoy the ride conversations of this team sub 500 down the stretch. Like if they're 20 and 33 and they finish 80 and 82, or let's say they go, they finish exactly 81 and 81, or even 82 and 83 wins, but they finish 3-4 games back of wild card spot 3. I can't speak for other shows. I can't speak for other people, but I'm not going to throw a parade of, look, they took a step forward. Hooray. Not in October. No. Maybe in December and January, when I get further away from it, I'll be like, hey, that is a step in the right direction. But I talk a lot on this show about how fan expectations change over time. People used to say, hey, if KU just wins a bowl game, fans will be satisfied forever. Well, KU won a bowl game, and now fans are talking about the college football playoff. They're not satisfied with just a little bit. They always want more. That's how I am with the Royals and how fans should be with the Royals. Hey, they've taken the step forward. They've had the look, we're better now season. But you can't now be like, oh, that's good enough for me. No. The fan expectation has changed. The expectation on the field should have changed. You hold a wild card spot with under 60 games to go. It's no longer, congratulations, you got better. You need to hold that wild card spot, or worst case scenario, like the Mariners of last year, where they lost their final series and missed the playoffs by one game. Heartbreaking, but you were in it till the very last day of the baseball season. That's how the Royals should be. We should not be on September, I think it's 21st or 24th, and they're playing at the Nationals and then the Braves in the year. Just be like, well, they got no shot of making the postseason because August was so bad. That is not how I'm handling the Royals going forward.
So text line 913-586-7610. We can take you guys' phone calls coming up at the top of the hour. We are going to talk Royals the rest of the way. We are off today at 4:30. Maybe we'll talk a little bit of Chiefs, not much, but I do want to talk Royals with you guys as we are heading into another important series. They have four games against the Detroit Tigers. We'll see if they can either split that series or win that series against Detroit. Detroit is still hovering around 500. I don't think they're a very viable playoff team, but that's still not a team that you can take lightly heading down the stretch. I did see this, and I want to share this before we get back to the Royals. Flavor Flav is an American hero. Now, I never thought I would say that, but I don't know if you guys saw this story or not. So there was a player, her name is Veronica Fraley. I believe that's how you pronounce her last name. And she sent out a tweet that said, I am competing in the Olympics tomorrow and I can't even pay my rent. My school only sent about 75% of my rent while they pay football players enough to buy new cars and houses. Flavor Flav just reached out to her and said, I got you. DM me. I'll send you the payment. I don't want you to have to worry about it and know that I will be rooting for you. I think people know this story by now. He is also the sponsor for the women's water polo team as well. I don't know why athletes don't basically set up an athlete NIL fund to support the Olympics. This is something that comes up. This is something that ties in with your charitable efforts. There's a lot of Olympians that I'm guessing there ain't a whole lot of money in fencing. I'm going to guess there ain't a whole lot of money over the course of the 4 years as you are preparing for this in the discus like this woman or the shot put or some of the other, I don't want to say obscure events, but non-prominent events. You're not getting big scholarship dollars. I don't know why more of these athletes don't maybe pool their money together for like a NIL collective. There is nothing stopping you from just, hey, I want to be the sponsor for this individual person. There's enough athletes in America that make a whole lot of money. Hey, throwing $50,000 into this pot could really help a lot of these people over the course of the 4 years as they are preparing and getting ready for this. The Olympics are going to be in America in 4 years in Los Angeles. Maybe this is something that a couple prominent athletes, you got some of these athletes about to touch $1 billion, and they got ties with Nike, Adidas, and some of the biggest companies and corporations in the world. Seems like we could do a little bit more to help these athletes as they prepare for the Olympics every year. The money is certainly there. NBC gets NBC has averaged 34 million viewers a night in America between Peacock and NBC in primetime to watch the Olympics. The interest is certainly there. We can certainly do more to help the athletes compete. Let's take you guys' phone calls coming up on the other side, 913-586-7610. I believe that there is only one question left for the Royals to answer. We've seen them do it against the White Sox. They now got to do it against everybody else. Keep it right here. So drive.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.